Welcome to Pipeline Meeting, where marketers come to talk about sales. I'm your host, Harris Kenny, and I'll be joined by a guest every Monday and Wednesday for brief 15-minute interviews where we'll share tips that you can apply to support your sales team and help them close more deals. If you don't have time to listen to this whole episode, you can skip ahead in the show notes in your podcast player or find the transcript at introcrm.com/podcast. All the episodes are published there. When you say AI, using AI to write copy, what do you mean by that? What is AI in this context?
In this scenario, AI could be anything, right? We're in the natural language processor world where it's really figuring out what the next word is. Like word one, and then what's the next best word for word two, and then what's the best word for word three. And then over and over again, then you have context. Something really crazy happened in the last 2 years. OpenAI created something called GPT-3. Natural language processing has happened for years. It just wasn't super convenient to use, and it was just really expensive to get there. Now the costs have gone down a lot lower. People are now using it for other things. But this also opens the door. I feel like it's the same thing with like crypto, right? Like blockchain and crypto technology gets a little more easier to use. Cloud gets a little easier to use. It opens the door to a lot of people to create stuff. That stuff used to require a lot of technical knowledge to start it, but now you don't need that as much.
What are some example use cases where you feel like things are working well? Because I know that I've seen people use AI-driven tools for writing an entire cold email or an entire blog post. And to me, it just falls flat.
Yeah.
But I do think there are certain use cases where it is the right tool. What are you seeing with SuperCopy? What are your users doing that stands out to you as really effective?
We were such a cockroach startup for 3 years. The cockroach startup term is like, we just refuse to die as a company. We just learned a ton from the people that we work with. The main demographic we work with in Ranger era was solopreneurs. We understand solopreneur problems to a critical level. And then with BetterSum, we've done client work a ton. And then these clients are usually like, they're doing 5 mil, 10 mil in revenue, right? But that doesn't mean profit. They have marketing spend. And you start realizing what people value. And I'm sure you hear this in the agency world. They value marketing first because that's the thing they understand to a point. And everything else is like, we'll figure out the pieces later, right? So knows you need some kind of marketing. Everyone knows some kind of thing around it. But they may not be the best person to do it. But recognizing that is also very difficult. One thing we see in the space for SuperCopy that we love doing is, like, number one, we build from like the best marketer's perspective. And that is usually very, very, very different from most people on how they market. There's a massive skill jump between the best marketers that have like insane flows, understanding. They understand the flow, how everything works. They understand what pain points they have to hit. They understand audience. They understand the differentiating factors. You can't just copy paste. And then every time you have that type of industry, you have a lot of copycats. You have a lot of copycats in marketing that are trying to copy things instead of understanding. They're like, I'm just going to create social posts. I'm like, cool. You can't just keep writing bad social posts. Right. There's a lot of that where they just create posts. They're not looking at the creation being the hard part. They're like, oh, I'll just create stuff. I'm like, yeah, but you can't create bad stuff over and over again. They believe they could create bad stuff and over and over again because they look at bad examples, and it's like a telephone game. The way we approach SuperCopy is we're building it for the best marketing. AI is a very blunt weapon. It's super powerful. It's like putting a V12 engine in a car, but it's a tricycle. The frame is a tricycle, but a V12. Like that happens a lot for a lot of software. You're not giving it much to work with. AI, if you give it a lot of context inputs and direction and be very specific about it, it's super powerful.
My first interaction with using an AI-driven tool, I was testing something that wrote cold email, and it basically used just a single LinkedIn profile and generated a handful of one-line, custom one-liners and custom subject lines. And to your point, it was such a small amount of data. If you look at someone's LinkedIn profile and really break it down, there's not that much on there, really. No. So what are you referencing? Where they went to college or something like that?
Yeah.
And what you're talking about, especially from this best marketer's perspective, I feel like it's pulling in a lot more data. So you talk about engagement intelligence.
Yeah.
What is engagement intelligence? How does that work?
The number one thing that we've noticed the best people do, and this is something we had to do too, was be very specific who you're talking to. This is funny because we see it in our product and we see the engagement, and we've seen it with the clients before in the previous companies. They literally say the word everybody. They're like, I'm going to talk to everybody. Everybody means no one in this market. It's like the most expensive way to talk to everybody is by talking to everybody. So they'll click on every demographic all at once. in our product, you could click demographics, like, oh, who are you talking to? Millennials. Yeah. But they also click baby boomers. They also click Gen X. They'll click Gen Z. This means nothing now. Number one, we start from the audience. What do the audience care about? What you're saying and what makes sense? What do they want to hear? And that's going to be your engagement metric. Number two is, what is the thing you're talking about? Is it nurturing your brand? Is it selling a service? If you're marketing, you understand how many of these you post. Like 90% of this, free content that's just there to benefit you, right? Yeah. Benefit the audience. That 5 to 8%, that's really used to sell something. And then you have your brand. Probably every brand that I've worked with or talked with, their brand book is in a trash can somewhere or like on a shelf that's never used. The founders themselves don't use a brand book because they spend a lot of money making it. And like I've seen $30,000, $40,000 brand books never utilized. How is this supposed to be useful? That's something we want to incorporate. And like, yeah, you spend a lot of time and money and efforts making this very specific. We want you to effectively use it. So we're using ways for people to connect those three parts. A good example is if I'm selling a water bottle, that product is probably one of 8 different products that this company sells. It could be just color, right? A good blue water bottle, generic. This blue water bottle has this one lid, right? Most companies will sell that blue water bottle the same way they sell the red water bottle. They can say the green water bottle, it's different lids. They're just going to talk about it the same way and talk generically to a very broad audience. But that's how marketing is done. That's how marketing is being rewarded because those go for quantity. They're like, I'm going to make 20 posts. You're putting money down. It's going to do something. It's not great. Best marketers, what we realize is this specific brand, this specific product or service is going towards this one clientele. And if we could get a higher rate of return on this one clientele, you win, right? Yeah. And that's how we measure. And that's how we're building the product.
Yeah, I could see the counter argument is, hey, if I have to do more custom messaging for different ICPs, that's going to take me more time.
Yeah.
And so that's where you're saying, well, okay, software can help you do that. It can help you niche down. So it doesn't have to be either throttle your output, so you're only doing one or two posts, or make everything super generic. It sounds like you're saying, look, there's this kind of middle, like programmatic middle ground a little bit where you use super copy.
Exactly.
Interesting. So this maps to something I'm seeing on the outbound side where I'm finding people are using GPT-3 to ask very specific questions and getting much, much better results when doing list building or trying to summarize like large volumes of content.
Yeah.
So for example, asking GPT-3 to summarize a podcast episode is much easier for it to do than asking it to create essentially what a transcript would be for a podcast episode based on a handful of data points. And so I feel like interpolating or whatever, working within data sets.
Yeah.
So what are the different places that you pull from in your tool in order to get that context? What are the different, do you integrate with different things? Yeah, obviously you've got your workflow where you're selecting demographics, but where do you pull from?
A lot of people's content online is non-existent. A lot of products and services, maybe there's a page and there's a paragraph maybe attached to it. That's if you've already done all the SEO work already. Like you've already packaged it and it works for a specific marketplace, whether it be like Amazon or like Shopify or XYZ. A lot of the cases, they don't even have that. They have maybe a description. We actually let users input everything. And we're actually talking with users constantly and be like, what is something you want to copy paste into that will explain this product very well? And the best people will get to utilize all of the inputs, right? Because it'll just fill out the story a lot more. That's something we're messing around with a lot. What is your slogan? What are keywords you use all the time? What is your catchphrase? What is the thing that you think would make this product connect with your audience more? We allow for that to happen. A lot of inputs makes this type of thing very difficult. There's a reason why people like very simple input and like maybe a tone, because it's simple on the AI to handle it and be consistent, but it can be consistently bad. If you want to have specificity and like be very, very specific and like actually utilize the power of the AI, you need to be very specific and contextual. But doing that's very difficult because the data points start conflicting. Can you be cool and sad? Can you be morbid and happy? And now it's competing with each other, right? Now you have to start figuring out like weight systems. GPT-3 works in a word format. What does 80% happy mean? It doesn't understand what 80% happy means, right? What's a word that means 80% happy? So you have to talk its language as well, on top of building other structures and other software and other deep learning models that's going to help build your product out over a longer period of time.
Yeah. Where are you seeing adoption within organizations?
We want to make this the ultimate communication copilot. So we want to reduce all of the unnecessary aspects of communication. And we also want to provide metrics and data points on like why you're improving a certain way, right? Generative AI is great, but also you mentioned interloping of the data. How do you use that data to make something a little bit better? That's something we're spending a lot of time on based on like the first MVP. We get a lot of interest from people that understand their brand, that understand their product, and they have to deal with multiple versions of it. Larger organizations struggle with this all the time because they may have multiple clients, they have multiple products. And the funny thing is people think they could keep replacing marketers over and over again, but it's very untrue. That's not how things work. I would rather have one or two really good marketers and really good understanders of that brand than like 20 like interns. A lot of marketing brands are like, let's get 20 interns. I'm like, yeah, they all don't understand your brand now. And they're all mediocre at best. I'd rather have the two that really get it and then augment them over and over again. Our most mass adoption are from people that understand how to switch brand voices, how to switch the value props. They understand marketing very holistically, and they actually picked very specific avenues that they thrive in. We've gone to marketing agencies and all the marketers are like, this would save me 10 hours to 15 hours a week. Now you have to convince the boss. Bosses and marketing agencies don't have the best understanding of technology. They've usually been in the field for like 15, 20 years. They're the ones that don't want to adopt technologies as fast. That's something we see. And then in marketing agency culture, there's still the concept of free internships. Go buy your own software, go buy your own thing. We're not going to pay you for 3 months and then we're going to vet you. That culture is still very predominant. So we try to avoid those type of organizations, primarily because they're just going to nickel and dime every aspect of it. We go towards people that can make a decision today. So like solopreneurs or marketers, they're very client driven. They see the need and they see brand voice. They see that holistically all the time. Like, here's a brand deck. Cool, I can now transcribe the brand deck into something that I could do. We've seen people cut down their marketing time from 20 hours a week to 2 using our software. Then we see a lot of larger organizations wanting to use us that cannot afford to hire another contractor. We actually just got Auburn University as a client.
Whoa.
Yeah. Because they have a very specific brand. But if you look at every college, there's maybe one or two marketers for that college. If you notice a lot of universities, they're in the middle of nowhere. So you can't really hire talent nationally unless it's remote and they don't really love that remote culture. Like, we want you in university, college. And they're like, well, all we could really do is augment our one or two marketers with interns that are also shifting out every 4 months, 6 months. So it doesn't help them because once they get a good one, they're going to leave eventually. So all of these people are stressed out. They're like, I need to do internal marketing for our internal events. I need to do external marketing for external stuff. And if we, even if we save you 2-3 hours a month, you already paid for the software. And now your job is, how can I be more creative, augmented by technology? I'm not going for your job. I have no intentions of this product replacing people. I have the intentions of augmenting the best marketers on the team to do their job better and also less stressed out and have less burnout, which we see that consistently. Marketers will get a call at 10 p.m. Hey, can you do this post for me? And it's due in an hour and a half. That's a true story we see all the time because your clients are like ravished. They're like, oh, we need this now. I'm like, yeah, that's not helpful. So we want to limit burnout. We want to help the best marketers do their job better and all that. I think that's our big focus. How can we get people to a place where they could be more creative?
What's one thing we didn't cover?
I think the funny thing is, I think people think marketing is very crowded. I would say 85 to 90% of marketing is just bad. It's crowded because there's 90% of just bad people. Like, they're bad actors. Like, we're propagating bad marketing. The funny thing is, if you go on any million plus subscriber, like Instagram account, that's a really big brand, they have probably the lowest engagement and the lowest like ratio you could ever see. A beer brand like Budweiser, right? They might have maybe 400 likes on a post, but you have 1.5 million followers. That's a horrible rate of engagement. And they're probably paying top dollar for those sexy, really nice posts with captions that are beautiful. It's not doing the job. No one's commenting, no one's engaging with you. It might look good on a brand book, but it's horrible in like what you're trying to do. We see that a lot on scale. And we see the second wave of things happening. People are going to be very specific. People are going to be niching down. People are going to have higher levels of engagement that's going to come from people that matter, not bots. So creativity is going to have a premium in the future, and technology is going to allow that premium to grow up a little bit more.
Where can people follow Supercopy? Where can people follow you online? Where can you get more info?
Our Instagram, supercopy.ai. I plan on giving away like 95% of the content being completely free. That's going to be used for training in the marketing space. We believe in content, all organic content, providing value. You can follow us on LinkedIn. I'm active on LinkedIn. And you could check us out on supercopy.io. As of now, we'll be switching to AI very soon.
That's all for now. You can find show notes at introcrm.com/podcast. The theme music for Pipeline Meeting is by Neighborhood Vandal. If you learned something, consider sharing this show with a friend. Thanks for listening.